I'm James Hahn II.
And I'm Mark LaCour.
And you're listening to the This Week in Oil and Gas podcast. This is the podcast for oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. If you've never heard of me before, I come from a website called TribeRocket.com. We do new media marketing for next generation oil field leaders. Mark, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yep, and this is Mark LaCour from ModalPoint.com. Besides helping teach STEMs in local high schools, we also do real market research in the oil and gas industry.
All right, cool. So the purpose of this podcast, it's our first one. Thanks for joining us, guys. We're going to be doing this every week. It's going to be coming out every Friday morning, and it's going to be real quick, just about 20 minutes long. We're just going to run through some trends we saw throughout the week and some stories. So, Mark, you ready to jump right in?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So first of all, we had this article. I saw probably about 15 different links on this one. So officials, rules changes have upped fracking water recycle. Why don't you give us a little background on what happened here and what everybody's talking about?
Yeah, so the industry as a whole has known that they've needed to do something with the frack water, right? It's expensive to do deep water injection wells or to try to ship it off somewhere. So they have been looking as an industry at ways to clean this water up. And basically, Texas has just stepped in and provided some guidelines. A typical well is anywhere between 1 and 3 million gallons of water to frack. And that sounds like a lot. But in the reality is it's less than 1% of the water that's used in Texas. And now that our operators are going to be able to clean it up, it's really going to have almost zero impact to the water used in Texas.
Yeah, and so those are definitely some big numbers. So from 1.2 million gallons to complete one vertical well in the Barnett in North Texas to 3.6 million gallons in the Eagle Ford Shale in South Texas. I don't know. Do you know the stats? Because I know it's like to water one golf course. It's staggering.
Huh? Yeah. So a typical golf course in the U.S. is about 3 times the amount of water per week. So you have to keep the numbers in perspective. Agriculture is the largest user of water in North America. Fracking doesn't even show up on the radar if you actually graph it up.
Right. Right. So, and I think you were saying that this is really not new news, really.
No, it's something the industry's been working on for a while. A lot of very smart people have been trying to figure out how to clean up this frack water. The newest thing is ceramic filters, and the thing they struggled with up until recently was actually pulling the low-level radiation out. But they have now figured out how to use ionized filters to pull that out, so the water that comes out is actually certified to use for organic crops. So if you think about that, if it can pass a government inspection to feed organic crops, it's pretty damn clean.
All right. So moving on, Texas producers paid record amount of state and local taxes last year. I always like talking about how much billions we're helping put into this economy here in Texas.
Yeah, it's crazy. So we did over $15 billion was injected to the economy of Texas by the oil and gas operators. That's a lot of money. And if you look at the taxes paid globally, oil and gas industry is a major driver of most of the world's economy. Most people in industry would not think that's anything new. Most people outside the industry would probably be amazed at the scale of the economic growth the oil and gas industry drives.
Yeah, well, it says right here in 2012, the industry paid 12.1. So when you're like, oh, three and a half, but then you remember there's a B. There's a That's B right. behind that number. I don't know. I just people don't realize what a backbone that this industry is. I mean, truly.
Absolutely. And I mean, even things like manufacturing jobs, which you would not equate to oil and gas, manufacturing jobs are being brought back here in the U.S. because of our low cost of energy. The major cost when you manufacture, whether it's T-shirts or bicycles, is the energy to manufacture. So the oil and gas industry touches the economy in multiple different ways. And every time it touches the economy, it's a positive thing.
Yeah. So touching the economy and then touching the environment. We had a lot of talk this week about fracking related air tests that were going on. And I think you said it before, there's no big news to anybody in the industry, but I always like seeing things like this kind of making their way out into the public domain so that people realize what's really going on.
Yeah, and so this is a study done by Modern Geosciences, and they basically in real time monitored the air quality near a frack site, and basically there was zero impact to the quality of the air. Now, the state of Texas has a public website that you can go to that you can look at all the remote monitoring.
Do you know that website? Do you know we can link it?
We'll put link in the show notes. It's I don't have it off the top of my head, but you can go to this website and look at all the remote air monitoring the state of Texas has installed, and over the years of collecting this data. The oil and gas industry, from a fracking point of view, has zero impact to the environment, which is not what you'll hear in the public, but is what the data shows.
Yeah, and that was one thing when I was living up there in Fort Worth in Cowtown. You know, being from Michigan, I have a lot of friends that fracking and so forth. And I'm like, well, there's actually there was I can't even tell you how many wells that were pretty much up the street from my house. And yeah. As far as I could tell, it was just like any other place I'd ever lived.
Yeah, so 20,000 wells in the Barnett area with 5,000 people. That's four wells for every person. If any place in the country was going to be affected by anything that was not right with fracking, it would be there. And there's like zero impact.
Right, right. All right, so let's talk about this. Chevron moves 100 jobs to Houston. What's that all about?
Yeah, so this is news, but not really. Chevron's been doing this for years. Chevron's headquartered in San Ramon, California. But they realized that Houston is a much better business environment for them. So most of the people that actually do the work for Chevron are headquartered here in Houston, Texas. And they're slowly moving people over. We have better tax incentives. It's actually cheaper for their employees. We have better infrastructure. We have two major airports. You know, it's a better way to run a super major like Chevron.
So all right. In the same vein, we got truckers with 35,000 openings seek jobless oil workers. What's that all about?
Yeah, so that's could be a bit misleading. So what's happening is this low crude price has affected just a part of the oil and gas industry. It's affected part of upstream, and it's affected part of the service companies that service that part of upstream. And this is a group of people that have the right commercial license, and formerly they were hauling stuff back and forth to frack sites. Well, that work has been curtailed, has been backed off a bit, right? Now these guys are jumping into the trucking industry, which just makes sense. They have the right license. They have the right experience. The industry as a whole is actually doing really well. So when you look at truckers, that falls under something called craft hours. And right now in 2015, the craft hours demand in North America is going to be about 142 million man hours. Last year was 119 million man hours. In 2016, we're going to need about 164 million man hours. And in 2017, about 188 million man hours of craft labor. Now, let me put that in perspective. There's only 103 million man hours of capacity in North America, which means that about 13,000 jobs a month are going to be created for the next 4 years. Which, you know, when you think about it that way, these guys that aren't no longer hauling frack supplies and now work with the trucking industry, it's just a blip on the radar.
Yeah, yeah. And I know I didn't I wasn't able to quickly find a link, but there was something else going on this week as well about the steelworker strike, I think you said.
Yeah, so that's I love how the media blows things out of proportion. So basically, United Steelworkers, which is our union, have decided to strike in the refineries. And they're striking about 10 refineries, the majority of which are in the Houston area, but there's some other ones scattered around. And they basically have unrealistic demands. They want to double their rates from their last contract, and they want to exclude non-union labor from coming into refineries. Basically, they're trying to put their chokehold on the refineries. Mm. Now, think about why they would pick this time of year or this point in history to do that. The refineries are making money. And the reason they're making money is their raw feedstock, which is either crude or natural gas, has been cut by 40%. So they're on a roar. And I don't necessarily mean, when I say refineries, most people think of fuel, gasoline, diesel, jet fuel. I'm actually talking about all the stuff refineries actually make, plastics, ethylene, petrochemicals. All that sort of stuff is just on a roar because their margins have increased so much. So the union knows this is a good time to try to leverage the refineries to get better terms. I'm actually somewhat surprised, James, and you may want to jump into this as well. Shell, from a social media point, is doing a fantastic job on their Twitter account talking about what's going on with the USW negotiations, and they're using social media to help leverage their position. They've brought a lot of their people in, their management, some of their retired people in to come in and pick up these jobs that the union people aren't doing because they're on strike. And so far, like the Deer Park refinery here in Houston, they haven't skipped a beat. It's going to be interesting. I think this is going to be a chance for the oil and gas industry to break the chokehold the union has on part of the refineries.
Yeah. And that brings up a mutual friend of ours in the Rewired.Solutions guys, in that, you know, this kind of opens up a whole conversation about capitalism and the outdatedness of these unions and so forth. You know, but you know, our friend Tim Herron over there, who's doing the work with Rewired.Solutions, now working on launching Oil.Rewired.Solutions, and that, you know, like you said, these people, I don't think they realize how replaceable they are, and how much of an alumni workforce is out there to help to fill the gap, and just keep the ball rolling with or without them.
Yep. So Rewired would be a perfect drop in for this. It maybe you and I should just connect Rewired to Shell and see what happens. Maybe Shell can give us a little kudos for that.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get that happening. Yeah, and also I have to quote Jim Rohn on this, let me tell you one problem with striking. You can't get rich by demand. So
absolutely.
So it's a philosophy of life. It certainly is, but you might want to look at your philosophy if that's what it is. All right, moving on. So this is just a commentary article. Shale boom impacts the U.S. and beyond. Not anything new. Not anything we don't know. Just I liked the table and I liked a lot of the stats that are in here. You know, so obviously we know that the shale boom has had fantastic. You know, growth on our industry, or I'm sorry, on our economy, with composition of shale energy expected to reach 56% of total production by 2040. What's that all about?
Yeah, so let's talk about it a little bit. So everybody knows about the shale boom, but a lot of people don't understand the history. The shale fields in North America are not new. This is where the Rockefellers made their money in the 1900s and 1910s. If you're old enough to remember Beverly Hillbillies, this is where Jed Clampett shot the ground and up bubbling crude, right? So those were called gushers. When they quit being able to have gushers, they said the fields are depleted. What they didn't know is they had only removed 5% of the oil out of the ground. Now, we come back in, and the really good operators are able to get about 15% more of that oil out of the ground. So you had 15.5, that's 20. That means 80% of the oil is still in the ground. And I and you and most experts believe that as we go through time, other technologies will be invented to be able to tap into that oil. So will we run out of oil anytime soon? Hell no.
Hell no.
It's not going to happen, right? But the impact to the economy is unbelievable. And then when you think about shale fracking, people think U.S., but all the capped wells in the Gulf of Mexico. You can frack underwater. Halliburton's already proven this with a proof of concept, right? So all of these old wells around the world that are depleted, that are capped, we can go back and re-stimulate. So the impact to the global energy needs is huge, and it's just a benefit to all of mankind. It's a great thing.
Yeah, when I hired into the oil business back in 2010, that is a huge shocker for even our president, Mr. Dave Fitula, the funky president, as we call him around the office. But he was shocked to hear that we still only get, you know, 15% of the. He said, "Well, I figured that we'd be much further down the road than that." And the analogy that my manager at Drilling Info used is dipping a paintbrush into a paint can, and you pull it out. You obviously don't get all of the paint, but then even on the brush, there's some left behind. So yeah, it is exciting to think towards the future and think about what might be coming. And on the what might be coming front, we have proposed pipeline would send Bakken oil east through Canada. What's cracking there?
Yeah, this is. I'm trying to get on a political rant here, but basically, our political and both parties. I'm not. You know, both parties have taken Keystone Pipeline and made it a political target instead of looking at it as an infrastructure target, which is what it should be. So our refineries basically cannot refine the sweet crude that we produce here in the U.S. They're used to producing refining sour crude from the Middle East or Canada. So what they're having to do is having to mix the sweet crude with sour crude. and something that's called blending, which is now happening in the pipelines, which is new, and in order to be able to feed the refinery the right feedstock so they can refine it and make stuff out of it. Well, it's since Keystone has become a political nightmare, natural business would tell you that there could be other ways to get that heavy sour crude to the U.S., and that's what this is about. It's just another pipeline that's going to be routed. Now, interestingly enough, most people know of Keystone, and they think that's the major pipeline. It's one of like 719 pipeline projects in the U.S. right now, right? So it's just become a political issue, and like I said, it's it needs to have become a critical infrastructure issue, which is unfortunately not going to happen.
And maybe we should have ended on a different one, but on a down note, Obama vetoes Keystone XL. Let me just jump in real quick. Why are we still talking about this? It's 2015. I've been in this business for 5 years now, and I'm like, are we still talking about this thing?
Yep. We've had 5 separate independent studies say it's a great thing to do. It will not impact the environment whatsoever. And the truth is, it's actually much safer to ship that crude pipeline than via rail, which is how it's being shipped now. I mean, you see in the news these rail car accidents, which are destructive to the environment and people get hurt. Pipeline is much, much safer. And then the wishers and the dreamers out there are talking about how they don't want to increase the carbon emissions from tapping this Canadian crude. Well, unfortunately, that crude's going to be sold to somebody. If we don't buy it, China's going to buy it. If China buys it, China has none of the pollution controls that we have. They don't have catalytic converters in their car. They don't have carbon scrubbers in their factories. They don't have lean burn technology. So if we don't buy this crude and use it, we'll actually make the world's pollution worse by letting the Chinese buy it. So, we predicted that this would not get approved this year. We're actually predicting that the Keystone Pipeline will get approved by the Democrats at the very end of 2016, at the end of the Obama administration, so that they can take credit for the jobs created. So, yeah. Like we talked about, unfortunately, it's become a political issue where it really should not be a political issue.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see that happen during the debates. Right? Well, we did this for the no. Despite you, we were able to make these things happen. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's everything that we had for this week. Let's see. Think in future. Next week, you're going to be on the road, right?
Yep. So we'll still manage to pull this thing off, but I will be on the road.
Yeah. And you're going to be up in Dallas, you said?
I'll be in Dallas. And then I got a trip. I got a trip up to Nashville, Tennessee. And then I actually will be in Rio, Brazil.
Nice. And this morning, where are you headed?
I'm headed to Baytown, which if you know Texas, it's halfway to the middle of nowhere, but it's where a lot of NASA is located. And I'm actually bringing about $150 worth of chicken wings to a bunch of workers for an oil field service company and doing some interviews.
I just wanted to hear that again, $150 worth of chicken wings. Perfect. They should love you out there. My road show is not very big right now because, as you know, my commute to the office is about 10 feet. But we do. Was that?
I said, yep, rub it in.
Yeah. But we do have the Social Media Marketing World conference coming up at the end of March, which getting really, really excited about. Always fun to go out there and steal all the best ideas from the smartest people. So in the meantime, I guess that was our first run, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Mark, any closing comments?
Nope. Be good, do good work, and we'll see you next time.
Absolutely. Go find some grease, guys.